Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have with us Dr. Daniel Benor, and today we're interviewing him on his book, Healing Research, Volume 3, Personal Spirituality, Science, Spirit, and the Eternal Soul. Dr. Benor is a psychiatrist and one of the main researchers in spiritual medicine, and we're pleased to have him back to discuss this fascinating book. I have a great deal of personal interest in many of the topics he discusses in this book, and so we're pleased to have him with us today. Hello, Dr. Benor. How are you?
Really great, Dr. Kolb. And yourself?
Oh, not too bad. I am reading with interest your book. It has very good scientific and logical as well as intuitive information about many of the psychic and spiritual phenomena that have been so controversial. Would you like to tell our listening office listeners a little bit about your interest in the subject, how that developed?
I have to admit that I started out a terrible skeptic about this, because after training in psychology in my undergraduate, and then medicine and psychiatry and research, I was just sure that all of this stuff was wishful thinking or nonsense or belief in a father figure that people wanted to resurrect after they'd left home.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I had a personal experience of observing a healer bringing about a change in just a few minutes that was medically impossible, that I was willing to begin to think otherwise. And this led me to write this series of books, the healing research books, where I started out looking at the beginning at studies, scientific studies of spiritual healing. And in the course of talking with healers, they would tell me that it's not me, it's God, or it's not me, it's Christ, or Allah, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I could accept that as their belief system, and it didn't demand of me any commitment on my part. But when they would say something like, it's not me, it's your grandmother who's telling me this information, and she's standing
mm-hmm.
right there next to you, the psychiatrist in me would squirm quite a bit at that. And yet, after years of talking with healers and repeatedly hearing things like this, I became curious to study whether there was any scientific basis for believing in any of what they were reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And the first article that really startled me was an article in the American Journal of Psychiatry, 1988. They did a survey, and the American Journal of Psychiatry is no New Age journal. I mean, this is a conservative medical journal. They did a survey asking people who had lost someone close to them whether they had ever had a sense of that person's presence after they passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you think, Dr. Kolb, would be the number or percent of people, you know, who would say yes to a question like that being done by this journal?
I'm not sure.
Well, it turned out 2 out of 3 people said yes, which surprised me, because I would think that the journal authors would not be particularly on the believing side of it, so they would, you know, more likely be encountering skeptical people. But, you know, hard to know what the selection process was, but they came up with a very high percent. So I started, well, there was a second question that they asked that I should share. The
mm-hmm.
second question was, Did you ever tell anyone about it?
And that was a high no.
Very high no. Almost right. No one would tell anyone because people mm-hmm. were sure that they were losing it. And they were certain that if they told anyone else, that they'd be viewed as pretty, you know, weird. In fact, some of them had told their family doctors
mm-hmm.
who had prescribed medication for them.
Oh, my. Right.
And one had told a psychiatrist who hospitalized them.
Oh, no.
And this is for something that 2 out of 3 people who
experience,
knew someone
yeah.
close to them experienced. Now, the sorts of experiences they reported were they either saw them
mm-hmm.
or heard them or both, or they just sort of intuitively knew that they were present.
Right.
And I started asking people in my practice whether, if they'd lost someone close to them,
mm-hmm.
as I was doing the history, whether they'd had this experience. I was pleasantly surprised that an even higher percent than in this survey not only said yes, but they were very grateful that I had asked
mm-hmm.
because it relieved them of their worry that somehow they were pushed over the edge by the bereavement.
Right, right.
And then I kept looking for other bits of research in this realm, and as I share in the book, I found an enormous collection of reports in a few major categories. The first one was the out-of-body experience,
mm-hmm.
where people report that they find themselves floating near the ceiling, typically, looking down on themselves.
Right.
And it's often when they're in surgery or they've had an accident and they're unconscious or some other traumatic experience.
Mm-hmm.
My own daughter reported this one day when she was doing an all-night study for an exam in university
mm-hmm.
and decided that she'd go to sleep for an hour. She just couldn't keep her eyes open. And as she dozed off, she suddenly found herself floating near the ceiling, watching herself in bed, dozing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, doggone it, you know, if I'm going to be wasting my time up here on the ceiling, I might as well be studying.
Very practical.
She woke herself up and mm-hmm. went back to studying.
Mm-hmm.
The other category that I found that is rather robust is near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
People who have been in an auto accident or who have been in surgery where they were flatlined, where their heart stopped beating or their
right.
you know even
yeah.
their brain
mm-hmm.
stopped functioning, and the monitors showed a flat line, there was no response. These people, especially the cardiac surgery patients,
mm-hmm.
will often report an out-of-body or a near-death experience. Now, the near-death experience takes it a step further, where people feel that they're traveling out of body and they're being interviewed by a being of light,
mm-hmm.
which is a very accepting, loving being that goes through a life review with them.
Right. That's very common.
Yeah. And they they find, contrary to their expectations, it's not St. Peter sitting there with a ledger, you know,
mm-hmm.
looking at all their sins versus all their good deeds, because the only criticism actually comes from themselves.
Right, that's
where
true.
Where they look at this review of their life, and at times they regret what they'd done or
mm-hmm.
Hadn't done.
Right.
Then there's a discussion about whether they're ready to move on in some cases,
mm-hmm.
where the being of light might tell them, it's not your time yet. You must go back. You still have, so to speak, part of your contract
mm-hmm.
you must fulfill. And in other cases, people will say, you know, I'm really not ready to move on.
Right, yeah.
I have wishes and desires and obligations to my family
mm-hmm.
or my job or something I've promised myself I must do.
Right.
Whereupon they return to their body. They return perhaps after the anesthesia or after the coma to consciousness,
mm-hmm.
reporting this experience, which they perceive as a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experience where they felt so loved, so accepted, where they learned that the end of physical life is not the end of consciousness.
Right.
In many cases, they were greeted in the near-death experience by deceased relatives, by,
mm-hmm.
by the spirits of these relatives, who welcomed them, and by angels. So they know when they come out of the near-death experience, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that life does continue after physical death.
Right.
Their lives are transformed by this experience. They just are not the same. They're not afraid of death. They oftentimes have reexamined their life commitments, and they're ready to be more serious or more dedicated or to take on more charitable work, because they feel that they understand in a much deeper way what life is all about.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing to me is that these near-death reports are consistent around the globe. I would expect, if this was a fantasy, that the cultural coloring of these sorts of reports, if they were just wishful thinking or denial of death, would be much heavier than they are. I would expect that in America, for instance, people would believe that they're going to come back, you know, and make a bunch of money, or you know, they're going to be in a better situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, according to the more materialistic, goals and ideals of Western culture. But it's just the opposite. People come back and they often renounce their monetary pursuits, personal monetary pursuits,
mm-hmm.
for charitable pursuits and
right.
healing pursuits. The same thing occurs all around the globe.
Yeah, it's
again,
interesting.
People remember during the near-death experience
mm-hmm.
that their life is but one of a series of lives.
Right.
Well, on to research and reincarnation.
Right, yeah.
So Ian Stevenson was the leading light in this field for some 30 years or more, probably 40 years, he personally interviewed people who reported a past life memory.
Mm-hmm.
He looked especially for children in third world countries where they didn't have television or radio,
mm-hmm.
so that would rule out the media as mm-hmm. a likely source for their report,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't travel much because they lived oftentimes in rather remote villages where the family was rather poor and travel would be only to the local market generally,
mm-hmm.
or to visit a relative who was ill somewhere, and that would be usually nearby. Yet these children would report memories of lives hundreds of miles away, sometimes in parts of the country where different languages or different dialects were spoken.
Mm-hmm.
The children would sometimes actually speak words or names that were uncommon in their village or in their culture. Stevenson would diligently interview the children, interview the parents, any witnesses who had heard
mm-hmm.
the children when they were telling these stories. He would then track down, to the best of his ability, the person who was named, who had lived in the distant place, if he could locate
mm-hmm.
where the child's memories were allegedly originating. In some cases, he was able to validate many details of the children's stories. In some cases, the children would be brought to the distant village for further corroboration. And I heard personally in Israel from a person who had I heard secondhand, really, from the person who had the firsthand report from a member of the Druze faith,
mm-hmm.
which believes that people reincarnate within 24 hours of their physical death.
Hmm.
And the typical way of checking out a child is to give them a test. So the child is brought to the edge of the village. They're then invited to take the family or the observers by the shortest route to their previous alleged home.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, sometimes a child might say, you know, there used to be a tree here. What happened to this tree?
Mm-hmm.
And in the current time, when they're taking this stroll by the shortest route to their previous life home, there's no sign of a tree. And they point out other features, a house that maybe used to be there and isn't there anymore, or a new house that has been built, or something like that. When they get to the home, the child is invited to name the members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And in the report that I had, this secondhand report, the child had succeeded in these first two steps. Now, up to this point, a child could have been coached by their family.
Right.
Because in the Druze tradition, if you are validated in your memory,
mm-hmm.
then the previous family treats you as a member of their family.
Right, yeah.
And it had been known for people in a family of poverty to coach their child to, quote, remember details, unquote,
mm-hmm.
of a rich family's family member.
Right, yeah.
But then the child is asked to say something about the family that, you know, is personal to the family.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the child pointed to one of the family members saying, you were my brother. And the family doesn't answer yes or no. They say, well, tell us more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to lead the child on if the child is guessing.
Right.
The child then said, we bought some land together, and it took a long time for the deed to arrive. It arrived finally on a day when it was really raining very heavily. But we were so excited that the two of us went out in the rain, and we planted the markers in our field to divide the field into yours and mine.
Mm-hmm.
Come, I'll show you those markers.
Yeah, right.
Now, those markers were meaningful only to those two brothers who had worked the field.
Right.
So, needless to say, the child was accepted as having a valid memory.
Mm-hmm.
Stevenson, after a period of time, came up with even more fascinating evidence of birthmarks and body deformities in the current life that conformed with traumas in previous lives.
Yeah, that's commonly seen.
Yeah. So a person might have a scar or a birthmark
mm-hmm.
in a current life that matches a scar or a trauma in a previous life.
Yep, that's true.
So, you know, as I started studying research in these areas, I was impressed with something more, Dr. Kolb. What impressed me was the coherence of all these reports cross-culturally, not just within
mm-hmm.
a field like out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences, but across the different study areas.
Mm-hmm.
So reports from near-death experiences were very closely similar to reports of past life memories that mm-hmm. didn't involve near-death experiences. Reports of out-of-body experiences were similar in their process to the reports of near-death experiences. Around the world, they were consistent and coherent. And so on through the book. So, you know, rather than me rattling on here, let me give you an opportunity to ask anything that might be of interest, you know, to you or that you think might be of interest to the people in the listening audience.
Well, I wanted to comment that some of more traditional medical scientific people and institutions tend to have a fear-based approach to this information. And I've been curious as to why that is. But I think that it has to do with the overall philosophy, the overall picture that the study of these individual things conclude. And that's that we are basically eternal. We do not die when the physical body undergoes death. We actually can have memory back to previous lives and maybe even to future lives. And I think the reason that such fear is generated in many of the institutions and in many of the individuals who, shall we say, are less ethical than they should be in their positions is because of an inherent fear that if this is all true, then they're in trouble. So I'd like your comments on that.
Well, I think they're in several kind of trouble, actually, because my own experience of being raised in the Jewish tradition was that the Orthodox teachings were strictly interpreted according to the current biblical belief of whoever was talking. If I looked in the history books, for instance, I found that in Jewish tradition, early in the first and second centuries, there were mentions of reincarnation discussions amongst the rabbis.
Well, the Essenes were a Jewish group.
Yeah, when I talk with Catholics or Protestants in Western culture, I found that reincarnation usually contradicted the teachings of their church. So they were in trouble if they were to consider this evidence valid, because then it means that some of the teachings of their church might not be valid. And if some of them are not valid, then maybe all of them are not valid. Now, the teachings of many religious institutions are fear-based.
Yeah, that's true.
They instill fear in the congregation, and the ostensible reason is to keep people on the straight and narrow path, so they shouldn't stray into sinful territory.
Right.
But part of the fear is thou shalt not question the authority of the religious teachers. Even if evidence of your senses or evidence of research or anything else contradicts what we tell you, it is, you know, not acceptable for you to question our teaching. So many people feel afraid to even listen to or read about or follow up on the research studies that confirm some of these less, you know, in Western culture, less accepted beliefs.
And what's interesting is that at the higher levels of the religion, actually the truth is known. I like to relate a story that happened to me several years ago. I was going to Maryland to visit my family and was in the Atlanta airport, and there was some problem with the airplane we were in, and they were trying to decide if they were going to fix it on the ground or move everybody to another airplane. So needless to say, we spent over 2 hours on the ground while they figured that out. And sitting next to me was the main scholar for the Southern Baptist church or whatever. I think it's more than just a church. I think it's a group of churches. And he had, in the course of, he was, of course, a PhD, and he had studied the Dead Sea Scrolls and a lot of the things that, a lot of the documents that I was familiar with, because I'm friends with many of the people who are translating, like, for example, the Bible from Aramaic directly into English. But I have a lot of my friends are spiritual scientists, so they have access to these ancient texts and the Dead Sea Scrolls and the different texts that the average person may not be aware of. And so we were talking, and he found out, you know, through the discussion that I do have the ability to answer questions, not personally, but through me, something that you call channeling in here, the mediumistic experiences in your chapter. So he started asking me religious questions that he had, that were of interest to him. And I started just bringing through answers that, of course, I'm hearing. I'm like a telephone. I'm just repeating what I'm given. And he was so fascinated by it that he asked me if he could call me again and tap into this information again. So, but he said that he absolutely knew that reincarnation was true, because it was definitely in these ancient texts. The Essenes believed in reincarnation. He knew that reincarnation had been taken out of the Bible by the Ecumenical Council in about 500 AD, except for two references. And he knew that, the majority of what the spiritual community knows to be true is actually true. And so he's at the top of the scholars of the Southern Baptist, and he knows what I know, which is fascinating. So I think the higher levels of the church, and probably including the Roman Catholic Church, know a lot about these things because they study them.
The sad thing is that children in Western society who report stories like this are often told to shut up or told that they're sinful to be saying it, which is a pity, because it shuts off their intuitive channel pretty quickly when people do that.
Yeah, as a human race, we should encourage, especially the children, to develop these gifts, because this is information that, if brought through, could really help us with our current problems, our environmental problems, our energy problems, our medical problems, our financial problems. This tapping of a higher level of awareness is very important right now, because the planet is in trouble in so many different ways.
I absolutely agree with you, Dr. Kolb. And the research on channeling is also fascinating. And on people who perceive spirits, ghosts, where, again, there are consistent reports at the same location made by intuitives who visit separately with no knowledge of who else was visiting there, and they make identical reports. And Gary Schwartz did a wonderful research study on very gifted channelers, where they recorded every single data point in the channeler's readings, and then checked every single data point with the person who had been the subject of the reading, and finding a very high correlation with information that there was just no way an outsider would have known about that member of the family. The skeptics
right.
say, oh, well, you know, they say, I see your grandmother here, and they wait for the person to nod.
Right, yeah.
Or to shake
That's
their
not,
head,
yeah.
And then they say, well, if, mm-hmm. if the person shakes their head, they say, oh, no, it must be your aunt or your mother.
Right,
aunt.
Yeah.
But this wasn't the case in these reports. They would tell pet names that had been used in the family, you know,
mm-hmm.
for each other, and traumatic occurrences or minor pleasant occurrences during
mm-hmm.
a family outing that no one would have known about because the family members would ordinarily not have mentioned something like that.
Yeah, that one of my friends here in town, who's a neurologist, has studied extensively a medium in Conyers who channeled Mother Mary for many years. And he wrote a book on that. And it's just interesting, the scientific study of these mediums and more accurately, some of the people who are channeling are actually channeling very high energies. You know, mediums may just be bringing through discarnate spirits, which are very different in terms of what I like to tell people is that just because somebody's dead doesn't mean they're any wiser. So if you're channeling a discarnate, they may tell you stuff that isn't necessarily true. But in sessions that we've had, things like information came through in August that in mid-September the stock market was going to crash in 08. Information came through in early April of 09 that by the end of April we'd be in a flu pandemic. Information came through prior to that, because many of us are medical, that we asked if we should take the bird flu vaccine before the swine flu came up. And the answer is not necessarily, because some of the vaccine had the flu in it. 2 weeks later, Baxter was found having put the virus in the vaccine. So these are details that could not possibly have been known by anybody in the group, you know, because they're so strange. I mean, why would Baxter put the vaccine, put the virus in the vaccine? Why would we have a flu pandemic at the end of April? You know, these are not things, it's not flu season, you know. So these are not things that, and yet these things come true. So we're obviously bringing in information from a higher level that's very protective. And that's what I tell people, you know, when they want to ask the purpose of all of this, it's protective. I'm a surgeon. I get information in visions and in auditory sometimes about auditory during surgery, but visions, you know, one time I was driving into work, had a vision of a hernia in an operative field, and when I got to the office, I was doing a tummy tuck, an abdominoplasty, and there was a hernia right where I saw it, but with, you know, the bowel pouching out. And this patient had never had surgery before. There's no reason to have that hernia there. I might not be looking for that. So these visions and this information is highly protective. And in a book I just wrote called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, I proposed that maybe companies should engage the abilities of channelers and clairvoyants to look at potential problems with their products after release onto the market. Do you see what I mean? That so they can be fixed before they generate class action lawsuits. I mean, we have access to information we're not using.
That's a wonderful suggestion, Dr. Kolb.
Yeah.
I think that's
logical, you know.
Well, yeah. And the use of medical intuitives is so promising. Can you imagine if...
We'd save so much money.
in every waiting room.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least in every emergency room, where they would be able to spot those who really needed the help quickly.
Right.
They would also be able to spot some of the things that were wrong that weren't apparent. Because medical diagnosis is still an art, and a very inexact art.
And sometimes you don't have time to run all the tests that you need to run, you know.
Yeah.
You need to do the ones that are going to give the positives first so you can treat them. Yeah, I love the, I worked in level one trauma centers for many years and loved the I just sit at the back of the, or at the foot of the bed and just get information. I get information from the physical because people were giving me blood gases and labs and whatever. But I would be able to see what was wrong. I'd see if a lung was collapsing. I'd see if there was a bleed in the head. And, you know, it was a real source of pride in our team, which was a military team. Many of my team members had been medics in Vietnam. We could get the patient from the minute they hit the door of the ER up to the surgery, making the incision in the belly within 20 minutes, which is really good timing. We saved a lot of lives.
That's exceptional. And I'm sure your intuition contributed an enormous amount.
Well, I remember three cases of Meckel's diverticulum, which is exceedingly rare. In a two-month period on general surgery, I made the diagnosis in the ER, and then, of course, we took the patient up to surgery, opened him up, and they did have a Meckel's. And my staff man said, "You realize that very few surgeons see three Meckel's in their entire career, and yet you diagnosed them in the ER before they came up." And,
yeah.
You know, and they all three presented differently because Meckel's don't always present the same way.
Yep.
So my surgical career helped me develop my intuition a great deal.
You know, most people can do that. Most people can develop their intuition.
Mm-hmm.
I teach a method of self-healing called WHEE, W-H-E-E. And, you know, I was pleased to be able to share that in one of the previous interviews with you.
Right.
And I might just mention that the method of WHEE, as well as, you know, life in general, can give us feedback that validates our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
We need that in order to learn to trust it, because just like with reincarnation or other beliefs, Western society discourages us from using our intuition, from acknowledging it, from developing it. In WE, where people are releasing their pain, using an affirmation and tapping on the right and left side of their body,
mm-hmm.
when they are looking at how fast the pain is releasing, they're starting to connect with their inner awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the release of pain provides feedback on how well they're listening
mm-hmm.
to their inner self. And then when we start asking, what might your body be telling you? People can just go inside and ask their pain, you know, what do you want to tell me?
Right.
Sometimes they get a message very clearly. It just comes into their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it doesn't. And so we can start asking questions using muscle testing.
Mm-hmm.
Because this has been known in hypnotherapy for more than 100 years. It's called an ideomotor response. If you ask a person a question and you check out their muscle strength, if they're telling the truth, their muscle strength remains strong. If they're
mm-hmm.
telling falsehood, their muscles usually will go weak.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use their muscles to ask questions. Now, could this be related to an early childhood event?
Mm-hmm.
And the person says out loud, well, this was related to a childhood event, and if their muscles stay strong, then you go further, and you assume that the answer was yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, well, it was an event before the age of 7 or before the age of 5. And you can narrow down the year.
Mm-hmm.
When people start to do that, they more often will come into a memory of what the trauma was.
Right.
Which is relevant to their current life, pain, or other physical issue.
Right.
And then we can ask, okay, will we be helpful to you? Will medication or surgery or mm-hmm. other treatments be helpful to you? And the unconscious mind really knows what's going to be good for a person or
right.
not.
That's true.
So we can all benefit from an awareness of our own intuition, and we can sharpen that. We
mm-hmm.
can hone it. We can deepen it. Imagine if children were taught this, so that they would grow up knowing to use their intuition.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to teach medical students at Emory dowsing and pendulum techniques. And many of them actually had spiritual hearing, because, as you know, when you're doing dowsing and pendulum, you do it for a while, but after a while you quit doing it because you actually have a knowing, you know,
yes.
that takes over, that's more quicker and more accurate and not as time-consuming. So, but it's
yes,
a good introductory method to, you know, which way to go.
And it's so wonderful when people start trusting that, and then they're in trouble, like you said, Dr. Kolb, because when their church or other people are telling them things, they may have the the intuitive awareness of the truth or falsehood of what
mm-hmm.
they're being told, which can be disruptive to their relationships with these other people sometimes.
It's very threatening to institutions that are inherently control-based and not real interested in, you know, in anything that would disrupt their power. They can get quite nasty.
And it's a real education to see how many religious institutions, or at least many of the members in authority in the institutions,
mm-hmm.
are motivated by that sort of power
mm-hmm.
of, I'm the authority, you are to obey.
Right. But I think in the next few years, I've been reading the Webbot stuff recently. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's fascinating. It looks like that a lot of that, the control-based power, I guess, energy throughout our society is crumbling. And another way of looking at things, another paradigm, another more broad-based, spiritually-based view is rising up within the populace. I mean, it's not coming from the leaders of the institutions. It's coming from the, you know, the populace, the people who are now through individual challenges, financial challenges, health challenges, whatever challenges come in, relationship challenges. Seek things, and that's why I do this show, as you know. That's why you write this book. You know, this is a great book, Personal Spirituality, Science, Spirit, and Eternal Soul, for exploring this aspect of yourself that is connected to all that is and is connected to a great wisdom that can guide you through this really treacherous time we're in. You know, the treacherous things that can happen to you are much more closely related to your environment right now, and you need guidance, and I think you need internal guidance, not necessarily the guidance that's on the TV, radio, or newspaper.
Well, that couldn't be truer, because the media now are doing more infomercials than you know, really telling us the news.
And a lot of things are not being reported, and then it's almost like the media is being used by the powers that be to put forward their agendas. And unless you can see through those, I've been telling everybody to watch Conspiracy Theory by Jesse Ventura. I just love that show. I think everybody needs to be aware of what some of the things that are hidden are.
And to learn to trust their own knowing.
Exactly.
Because, somewhere down the line here, we're going to reach a tipping point where the environment is just not going to be able to sustain the number of people that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And in a collapse, a major collapse, personal intuition is going to be really important.
Yeah, it's a difference between being, say, in a building or underground where the earthquake is going to have a really bad effect, or being guided to be in a relatively safe area, maybe leaving town, maybe not being on the top of a building that isn't protected architecturally with earthquakes. Earthquakes being one. There's other dangers out there. There's dangers of these pandemics. There's dangers of the medical treatments for the pandemics. There's dangers all over the place, and you just have to know which way to go.
Yeah.
Which decision point?
And to add to the list, there are dangers in our food.
Oh, absolutely. The GMO.
There are dangers in our water.
Yeah.
That we need to just always be careful of.
Right. I'm seeing a lot of Morgellons patients, and Agrobacterium has been found in those patients, and they report that when they eat genetically modified foods, their symptoms get a lot worse. So we've interviewed Jeffrey Smith on two of his books, the latest one, Genetic Roulette, and then also an environmental attorney who wrote a book called Uncertain Peril, I believe. But the genetically modified stuff is very important to educate yourself on and know what brands adhere to, avoiding that, and what brands don't.
Mm-hmm.
There's dangers in our food, dangers in some people believe there's dangers in the air. And I think that, I think information is very important now in order to make daily decisions in what you take into your body and what you, what you don't take into your body.
Yeah.
And then,
Dr. Kolb, for people's personal spirituality, once we get away from just being spiritual on Sunday in my church,
mm-hmm.
and feeling that I'm, more spiritual than you are because that's what my church tells me.
Right.
I think we stand a better chance of working together rather than being in a competitive or an exploitative relationship with other people, so that personal spirituality can contribute to global cooperation in
mm-hmm.
dealing with global warming, for instance.
Yeah.
It can contribute also on a personal level in the sad case, which is unfortunately increasing, of people dying well before their time
mm-hmm.
because of pollution, probably, or other environmental stressors.
Mm-hmm.
There are young people getting heart attacks and cancers and autism and other problems that are increasing beyond any reasonable expectation from natural processes.
Or unnatural.
Almost certainly there are toxins that are contributing to these.
That's true.
So developing our intuition is important.
It is. It's very important.
There's a bit of a message here that people tend to skirt around.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about this, I like to remind people that we are all going to die someday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bad news. And the good news is that we're all going to die someday.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to move on to another existence.
Yep.
So that dying doesn't have to be something that's fearful.
Right.
There are cultures where death is a celebration, just like a birth into another dimension, similar to a birth from the other dimension into physical dimension.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So being aware of personal, spiritual connections can be an enormous contribution to our navigating through life in a more healing way.
Yes, it can. And I think right now, more than ever, especially the next probably 2 years, it would behoove people to take time, if only 5 minutes a day, to be silent. You can usually be silent in the shower or while driving a car and turn the radio off and just see what they get, impressions. I know driving into work, I get all sorts of information about things that I thought were done but weren't, patients that are in trouble, upcoming surgeries that are going to cancel, dangers to, you know, my staff or my my practice, that can be intervened so that I don't have to, you know, go through the longer process of fixing them once they happen. I even once heard that the picture was going to be stolen out of the patient bathroom, but I dismissed it, and of course that day it was. Fairly significant detail on these, in this information. So for the, you know, for those listeners out there who might think that I am just hearing, you know, what I want to hear. No, I hear specific names, places, dates, items that I couldn't possibly be making up of what I know, you know, my knowledge base. So
and
this information is coming from a higher level.
I would warrant you sometimes hear things you'd rather not hear.
Oh, no kidding. It's like, oh, no, I can't believe that that's going to happen. And then it does.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times we have contracts at higher levels. And so when things happen, and you can go within and find out why they happened. And what I found is that that really allows one not to react emotionally to things, to not be a victim. You know,
yes.
Really crazy things happen. And yet if you can gather more information about why they were allowed to happen, I operate on the premise that everything really is in divine order, even if I don't understand why. But fortunately with spiritual hearing, you can probably find out why. And for those of you out there who don't think they have spiritual hearing, you may have something called spiritual feeling. And I tell people that they should, when they have a decision to make, they should feel, go into the future with both choices that they have. Say it's to go into a business deal or a relationship. Go into the future and feel how it feels in both areas. Because a lot of people have their feeling nature more evolved than say maybe they're hearing or seeing. And
that's
of course
lovely.
The highest, which the masters have, is the knowing, you know. The
yeah.
masters simply know it, and it's beyond reproach, and it's always true, and that's the level we're trying to get to.
I call that knowing.
Exactly, gnosis.
Yes, an inner knowing that as you practice and sharpen it, it acquires characteristics that internally have a feeling of validity, of truth. So that increasingly one learns to trust those perceptions that come with that feeling attached.
Right, exactly. Well, Dr. Benor, we're coming to the end of our hour. Would you like to give some contact information for our listeners?
Certainly. I have a website. That's the Holistic, Holistic, healingresearch.com. It's all one word, Holistic healingresearch.com site, where you can see more information on my books, on the one that I've been talking about, which is Volume 3 of Healing Research, Personal Spirituality. The subtitle is Science, Spirit, and the Eternal Soul. You can order that through my website. You can also order it through Amazon. On my website, you can get it with no postage charges. There's a workbook that goes along with this volume. There are the other volumes on healing research, one looking at the studies that have been done on healers around the world, 191 controlled studies. Many of them are in non-human subjects, so that you can't say it's a placebo when a mouse or a plant or a bacterium is responding.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a related website that's www.paintap, P-A-I-N-G-A-P, paintap.com, where my book on dealing with pain and developing your intuition through your dealing with pain can also be found and purchased. The book is called 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Release, R-E-L-E-A-S-E, Release.
Yeah, that's a very good book.
Thank you.
Well,
and
well,
I'm really delighted, Dr. Cole, to have you interview me again. It's always a pleasure.
Sure, we'd love to. We've been interviewing Dr. Daniel Benor. His third volume of Healing Research, Personal Spirituality, Science, Spirit, and the Eternal Soul. Next week, we have Cindy Dale back to talk about her The Subtle Body, an Encyclopedia of Your Energetic Anatomy. And then on the 30th, Paul Rademacher, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe, Travel Tips for the Spiritually Perplexed, which is a great book as well. Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate your being with us, and I'll have Gio get in touch with you for our next interview.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Kolb.
Join us again next week for Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb wishing you a good week.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plasticos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plasticos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plasticos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plasticos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plasticos?
Plasticos is in Dunwoody. Plasticos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plasticos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.